Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fly Girl Show. I am your host, Casey Grant, and I am so happy that you decided to tune in with us this morning to meet my wonderful, exciting, and interesting guest. My guest today is Marlene Taylor, who was one of the U.S. Air Force first black traffic controllers to handle that hectic, complex Tokyo's traffic pattern at Yokota Air Force Base. Good morning, Marlene. How are you today?
Good morning, Casey. I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm great. How did I pronounce the base correctly? Yokota?
Yes, Yokota Air Force Base, Japan, though. You left that part out. It is in Japan.
In Japan. Well,
Tokyo, Japan. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the most important things because, as you said, it was one of these, you know, just thinking about it, and in my mind, I see how hectic and busy and hustle and bustle Tokyo is, but now you're telling me you're handling that hustle and bustle in the air.
Yes, you're right about that. You know, this is just a little aside, in that they have pushers there. The pushers are legal. They're legal pushers, and what they do is because it's so many people trying to get on the train. There are people that push you on the train so that the doors can close. And so many people want to get on. You know, nobody wants to be left off and be late for work. So they enjoy being pushed onto the train. And it's like, please push me because I want to get on this train. So, yeah, it's very, very crowded and hectic there.
Double. Well, let me understand that better. So when the train doors open, and after I get this clarification, I want you to give my audience a little history about you. But when the train doors open, people are standing there, and the pushers, do they exit on the other side of the train, and then, or are they civilized enough to allow all the people to get off before they start loading up? Because, you know, New York is crazy. You're in and you're out and you get the door closed. It's hustle bustle. How does that work?
It's like New York. Sometimes the doors open. It's according to where the doors open. Doors open and then people exit.
Okay.
But then the people that want to get on, if you're headed like in town as opposed to, you know, at rush hour, then you have a million people trying to get on the train, and so you have these pushers that push people. And a lot of Americans and foreigners don't understand that that's their job, to push you on the train.
Oh, my God.
So just to let your listeners know, don't get upset if you can't take the train in Tokyo and you have the pushers push you onto the train. They're just doing their job.
Oh, my God. Well, that's interesting. And, you know, that's the whole point. You know, I was an Air Force brat. My father retired from the Air Force. And our tour was Africa. I lived in Tripoli, Libya. I lived in England. And then my father retired at Chinook Air Force Base in Illinois. So you and I have that in common. You served, but I was a brat. So, you know, I felt like I got the best of the benefit.
Being an air traffic controller, I kind of trumped you there because I could get on a plane and hop and just go anywhere free. All over Asia.
Oh, my goodness. So give us the history. Build us up to you joined the service. Now, was it something you always wanted to do? Because I did want to join the service at one time, but I wanted to join the Navy because this is pretty shallow. But the Air Force uniforms weren't quite as impressive as the Navy uniforms.
Well, you're right.
Shallow.
That's not shallow. That's just, you know, I... that's something to consider as far as I'm concerned. but the other thing to consider, and which I thought you were going to say, Casey, was that the Navy, you're stationed near a city. The Navy bases are always near a city, whereas the Air Force, they need runway. So you're going to be kind of on the outskirts of the city.
Okay.
You know? And then the Army bases, you can be, it could be anywhere. But for the most part, it's kind of remote. The Army bases are kind of remote. Yeah, usually in small towns and inland and stuff like that. But so but the Navy, is a little more glamorous. And maybe that's why they have more glamorous uniforms.
Okay, because that's exactly what I want. Now, my niece is in the Marines, so we still have the military in our blood and in our family. And she's stationed now in Frankfurt, so we're proud of her. But so why did you? Where are you from, and why did you decide to join the Air Force? So give us a little background on you.
Okay, I was. This was a strategic move for me. I was. I decided that I was going to join the Air Force so that I could go back to college and use the GI Bill to pay for college for me, and to travel and see the world. And for free, that was the other thing. And
that's the most important word, free.
Yeah, exactly. I love learning about other cultures, and I saw stuff on TV, and I'm an avid reader. I was going to say was, but I still am an avid reader. And as a child and a teenager, and I just love reading and learning about new stuff. So to me, learning about new culture and learning new languages was very exciting proposition. So that was some of the reasons. The other reason, like I said, was very strategic, was that I was going to use the VA benefits to buy a house. Because I said, well, I don't know if I'm going to get married or not, you know, just in case. I need to be able to buy my own home. And, as a woman, single woman. And so I said, I'll use the VA benefits for that. And any other VA benefits. So that was, and that's what I thought about, were the benefits and the travel, and the and then the training as an air traffic controller. And my father was one of the first black air traffic controllers in the country, back in the 60s.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What year? In the 60s?
In the 60s. Yeah, 1960s.
Okay.
Yeah, he was one of the first black air traffic controllers, so with the FAA, and so he also, inspired me to join the Air Force and to become an air traffic controller, because then I could use that experience and jump start my career with the FAA. So it was all very and planned.
Oh, okay. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So where are you from?
I'm originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I make sure I say that, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, because there is a Philadelphia, Mississippi, and it's kind of funny. And then when I was stationed in Biloxi, so I was stationed in Tokyo at Yokota Air Force Base, Japan, for 3 years, and then I was recruited become an air traffic controller instructor, and the training goes on in Biloxi, Mississippi. Well, there's a Philadelphia, Mississippi, and every time I say I'm from Philadelphia, people say, oh, you're right at home.
Well, I think you probably have to be from there to know, because I've never heard it. And I was a flight attendant for 35 years, and I never heard of Philadelphia, Mississippi, but that's the joy of still being alive. You still learn. So can you give us, what are some of the, I try to tell my audience and people that when I'm out on my speaking engagements for my book, which is Stars in the Sky, I try to tell them there are so many other fields in aviation. You know, we all think of pilots and we think of flight attendants, but it's such an interesting and vast field in aviation. So I'm so happy to have you as the air traffic controller to explain to my audience of the young kids to kind of have them to investigate what it takes. What are the qualifications? I know you were in the service, so yours was a little different, but what would you say that some of the strong points would be for a high school person to concentrate? Would math be something, obviously, I would think would be a very a field that they needed to excel in, or to, if not excel, but they master it to some degree? Or what would you say some of the, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's one. That's one of the things in school that you would want to concentrate on. And you have to have a college degree at this point to join the FAA and to get a job as an air traffic controller. One of the most important, when you take the test, is basically geared towards being able to understand patterns and see patterns in your head, in your mind, and work those out. So I guess that would be math problems, yeah. Math problems, working them out in your head. Spatial, you know, it's all about spatial activity. And let me just say this. One of the most important thing to learn is chess. Really, how to play chess? Because yes, the game of chess. That's really the most important, which is, you know, and hopefully you can take that at school. But if you don't take it at school, learn the game of chess. That's going to be the most important thing to help you be an air traffic controller and be a good air traffic controller, because you learn strategic moves and you because you have to keep one step ahead of your pilot. You have to anticipate their needs, where they're trying to go. So, you have to keep your eye on the whole board, like a chess game. You have to, when you have all these planes in the air, when you're juggling, you know, 20 planes at a time, it's like 20 chess pieces on your board. Yes, and so you have to. You have to keep your eye on the total board. You have to keep your eye on the total picture of all the pieces on your board and where they are and where they're going, and you know what altitude, how fast they're going. You have to know their turning ratios. If you have to, you know, make a turn, then and you have to know what speed they're at. And so you have to keep all those things in mind when you're working traffic. And so, my father taught me and my sister how to play chess. So I think that was another reason why I was good I know that was another reason why I was good at their dress control, because I played chess well. I was a chess champion.
Well, let me interject two questions, because as you were talking, my mind, I did learn how to play chess, and so I understand the strategy and the thinking ahead, because when you're playing chess, that's all you do. You make that move, and then you're still thinking, if they move here, I'll move here, they'll do this, don't take my queen, don't take my king. So I understand that mental capacity that you're saying it has to be, and problem solving. And nowadays, we have other things, not only just chess, but other games, other mental games to exercise your response time, because it is about response time.
That's true. Best answer I could give you in terms of what to prepare yourself for career in air traffic control, math in school, and be proficient at chess.
For you, because you were in the Air Force and you were just dealing, so when at this hectic airport, is it just military Well, when you're doing this, you're dealing with the air for the military aircraft taking off. So once they do or land, but once they do that, then they get into the general. So is it a sign off from the military to the commercial space, or are the airplanes only flying? Is there a certain area for only military planes and certain areas for only commercial planes, or do they mingle?
Well, in my case, in Tokyo, it was commingled because we were in Tokyo. So there was no way that you could just assign airspace to military. And you know, it was both. Yes, we had airliners and as well as military. We also had Navy, because there was a Navy base nearby, so we would do carrier offloads and onloads, and you know, and the Navy exercises and things like that. And so there was a lot going on in that airspace. Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
Pizza with everything on it.
Okay, and another question I'd like to ask, and I'm hoping that my audience is saying, ask that question. But so when you're sitting in front of your screen, is the whole screen divided up in sections, so to speak? So the gentleman that, or the woman, since you were one of the first women or black women in this particular for the Air Force? Where was your position in this?
I was the first black woman air traffic controller in Japan.
Okay. In Japan.
Yeah. And first and only.
The
whole time I was there. I was first and only the whole time I was there.
And how long were you there?
3 years.
Were there other women?
Yes. There was another woman, a white woman, and I think she was probably the first woman.
Okay.
And they gave her a very hard time, and the guys did, and ran her off.
They ran her off?
Yeah. So then after I came, two other white women came. And, I say they ran her off. They make it hard so that,
yeah.
You know how they made it for Jackie Robinson? You saw the Jackie Robinson movie and,
absolutely.
You know, and how they would, yeah, and how they made it hard. You know, how, and they, I'm sure they made it hard for you too as a flight attendant, one of the first black flight attendants
exactly.
in the country.
Yeah, they make it
hard for you to do your job.
Well, we understand
and they made
that
it hard for
color.
Me.
Yeah, we understand that breaking the color barrier. That's why I'm so excited to have you on the show today. And it's a part of your personality that you have to have strength. You have to have that. Your father, obviously, at that point was a great source of resource for you because
yes.
you could ask him questions. He could help you. He was also very supportive. So you had an extra plus in your being able to hang in because it's, I'm sure the first woman who did it, it wasn't that she wasn't capable, but you have to
exactly.
have that strong, yeah, you have to have that fortitude
yes.
to do that.
Yes. And so, and a little charm goes a long way also.
Absolutely,
Yeah. And then because my father did, yeah, he gave me advice, and I guess a little protection because he was a GS-16. And when he came to visit, I didn't know that was such a big deal on GS-16. But when he came to visit, they rolled out the red carpet for
oh.
him. When they found out they had a GS-16 on the base, yeah, they rolled out the red carpet. And to come to find out, it's Marlene's father. So that helped some, too. But by the time he came to visit, I was finished my training. I was just about finished my training by the time he came to visit. So I had already broken through, you know. And what I did to break through was I learned the rules and regulations of flight, air traffic control flight, inside and out. I was like a Bible fanatic. And that and that 3510 rules and regulations of air traffic, air flight was my Bible. And so I learned that verse and page and paragraph And so when the guys would try to tell me that I did something wrong, I could quote them, verse, paragraph, page number. I'm correct.
Oh.
And I said that enough times, and that they would actually look. They would say, oh, you are right.
Oh, well, let me ask you this then. Two things. Clarification. Now, the ranking that you just gave us, that was a civilian. That's a civilian ranking,
yes.
Then, right? Okay.
Yes.
Because
your father
was
with the FAA.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, and that's high on the list for us that are not into the civilian ranking. So that is like at the, is it the top or what would be the highest? I mean, 16 is
yeah,
the 20?
Actually, GS 16 is the, I think GS 16 is either the highest or very close. And then after that, you're on an appointment.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Oh, it is. Okay, so the next thing I want to ask, because you just said, the last thing you just said was about mistakes. Now, that word, an air traffic controller and airplanes in the sky, doesn't seem to go hand in hand, because there aren't many things you can do to make a mistake without it being catastrophic. So when you're learning, can you explain to us, you have someone that's working along with you, or what are the safety mechanisms that forewarn you should a potential catastrophe?
Oh, definitely. You have a trainer and by your side is on the job training. And so, you know, you go to classes and you get trained there. But then once you finish your classroom training, then you go to on the job training. And it's according to the level of complexity of the airport. It depends on the complexity of the airport, what your pay scale is going to be, and then what your how long your train, your OJT is going to last.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if you get to, let's say, for instance, you get to Charlottesville, Virginia, where there are, you know, the airport closes down at night, they have, you know, very few, the traffic just isn't that high versus getting stationed in Washington, D.C. or New York, where your, you know, traffic is very dense. Then your pay grade is going to be lower, and because you're not working as hard, and you're not, because of the traffic, it's not as difficult. Traffic patterns aren't simple, and the amount of traffic is high. So that's how that works. I have my computer on while I'm talking to you, so I decided to Google the highest GS level, and it's 15.
Oh.
So I was mistaken. He was the GS 15. That's the highest level.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah.
And
oh,
then
my.
Each grade is separated into 10 steps. So I don't know what step he was, but he was up there.
Oh, he was, yeah, a highly respected number. That's one of the most important things at that point. He was an accomplisher, an achiever himself.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then one of the other things that helped me in my position was that I had the commander was married to a Japanese woman. And we became friends, her and I, because I was so interested in Japan and learning the culture, learning the language, and you know, and I immersed myself in the culture, and so she liked me because of that, you know, and she liked to be sent to me, and then this is her husband, so he liked me too, and so so I had him on my side. On
that
was
another
thing. Yeah.
Now, how old were you?
21.
That is a big responsibility for a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
So, my goodness. So, do you speak Japanese?
A skochi ne.
Oh, that must be a little.
Un poquito.
Okay.
Spanish, very little.
Okay. And in the plain old English, a little.
Yeah. Oh, no, I speak Ebonics and King's English.
Oh, you are, you know what, you're so well-versed. You are so well-versed. Well, I love that. Now, for me, my little knowledge of air traffic control, because, you know, as I said, flying for all those years, you get held up in the traffic patterns. Now, my understanding is, and I don't know if it would be the same for the Navy, but is it 5 miles apart? Up and they're stacked, so you're 5 miles up and down and 5 miles in front of you. Is that a true statement to how they space the aircraft?
Yes. It depends on the visibility. You can go down to, if you're being under radar control, you go down to 3 miles. But if you're flying what they call IFR or VFR, then visual flight rules, so the pilots are maintaining 5 miles apart, and then 1 mile, 1,000 feet up and down, okay?
Oh, so it's 1,000, okay.
Yeah. Whereas if you're flying IFR, which is instrument control, which means that the controllers are telling you which way to go every second, and, you know, where to turn and how to turn, and go up, go down, go right, the left, then the distance is a little smaller, and you can be 3 miles apart. So actually, 5 miles and 3,000 feet for VFR, for visual flight rules, when the pilots are like on their own, so to speak, you know, and they're just. And that's when you don't have much traffic. So that didn't happen too often for me because we were in Tokyo. So that didn't happen where they were on their own. It was basically almost 100% instrument control where the controllers had to tell the pilots where to go because it was just so much traffic. So the rules were 3 miles and 1,000 feet apart.
Okay. Well, the stress and the strain, I know it takes its toll. Every job has its hazards or the destruction of your health and your mental. I heard that was such a stressful job that there were a lot of people with drinking problems. Is that true or not? This is a truth and answer, you know, type of thing. True or false?
Oh, truth or dare.
Yeah, right.
Well,
that's very stressful.
The truth is that we did drink a lot. I didn't realize that it was the problem just for us.
Okay.
I didn't realize it was a problem just for us, but we did, after a round of shifts, yeah, there was some drinking going on. Mm-hmm.
Well,
and when I say around the shift, I mean the whole week, and then you have your 2 days off. You know, we would go out afterwards.
And really,
after our shift. Mm-hmm.
And I do want to, as you just said, and we really want the audience not to say, do not walk away with this and say that air traffic controllers have drinking problems. We are not saying that, as well as we don't want to say on layovers. That's what we did. When we would get together, we went out to dinner, and we would have our glasses of wine. We wouldn't have any excessive. But so we're not trying to say that this is a field where there's a lot of alcoholics. No, we are not saying that. But I can imagine it is a tight family, and that when the time is, when you are really able to relax, there's nothing better than a glass of wine to help you relax. And we're not saying have 20 of them and then go back to work. That is,
No, it didn't happen like that, no.
Exactly.
No.
Do you have certain times?
And like you said, we were like a family. Yeah.
Exactly.
We had to be. We worked very closely together.
You had to get
along. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you had to, because it's a very stressful thing, and I'm not sure if and then you watched out for each other. I mean, if there was something dealing with, if one of your coworkers was dealing with family problems, everybody would keep, an extra eye out for that person, because you have to have full concentration when you're sitting in front of that computer.
There you go. Very good, Casey. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's a good observation.
Yes. So what now, did you do this afterwards when you left? Did you go and work for the commercial?
No, I didn't. I wanted to. We decided, I got married, and my husband went on to be an air traffic controller and with the FAA. And I stayed home, and we had twins. And and I was a housewife. And then I started writing. I have a couple of books.
Well, tell us about, let me see. How long did you do? Just try to put a period to your career. You stayed in and you did air traffic controller for how many years?
6 years.
Oh, you did your 6 years. So you just did, that would be two tours or one tour?
Yeah, that was two.
Okay, yeah. So you did two tours and got your benefits.
Yes. And I had an honorable discharge. Perfect. With lots of accommodation.
Which is what you wanted to do, which is what you had said. You wanted all your benefits, so we understood that. And so from there, you went on. And so tell us about your books, which is, I'm quite interested in that. What are your topics? What are your books about?
Life is What You Make It, Darling, is a... it's dedicated to those longing for romance to continue forever and ever, and it is basically about it's a romance, and as a matter of fact, it's erotic.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little,
Fifty Shades of Grey erotic.
No, it's probably less erotic because there's no bondage or anything like that in it. But there's none of that. But it's about it examines the word commitment and what it takes to make a survive the ups and downs of a lasting relationship. That's basically what it is. And it looks at a couple, Booth and Jackie Blacksmith. And they're going through some changes in their marriage, and that's what the first one is about. And he's an air traffic controller.
Oh, well, then that's good. That was easy for your research because you already knew the ins and outs on that.
That's right. Yeah. So he's an air traffic controller in the book and the story, and then the relationship kind of continues into the next book, which was called A Silver Tongue. And that has to do with the controller using talking, I guess, a lot. And then at the same time, it's a play on words, Silver Tongue.
Okay.
That is more of a drama, a psychological drama. So, got to read it.
Those are both the opposite ends of the spectrum there.
Yes, they are. Well, see, the second book is dedicated to all survivors of domestic violence. And there's a symbol on the front of the book. It's a germinating seedling called the Wawa Aba, and a Dinka symbol of determination. And the seed of the Wawa... Your Wawa tree is very hard and makes germination difficult for the seedlings, but somehow it finds a way to grow. And it's not only is the seedling persistent, but it finds a way to thrive and grow. And that's what the story of the Silver Tongue, which I now have changed it to call The Controller, because it's a better title, The Controller. And
okay.
So the reprint is called The Controller. And like the Wawa seed, making it and surviving against all odds is the story of The Controller.
Now, where is the Wawa tree? Is that in America or is that...
It's an African...
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
African. Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And so I'm sure in your book you give some history on the wawa tree so that at the point the person can really relate to it and say, I'm a wawa tree because I'm a survivor.
That's right. Yeah. So with that, I started Tantella Publishing Company.
Oh.
And the mission of the Tantella Publishing Company is to provide inspirational stories of survival and determination and transcendence that uplift the human spirit. That's what I'm doing now. And a portion of all book sales is being donated to help support women's shelters until there's no longer need for them.
Oh, I think this is a wonderful new dimension on you. And so are you in Philadelphia now? You live in Philadelphia? Where do you live?
I'm from Philadelphia originally, but I've traveled a lot, and so right now I am in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay, so you're in Virginia. Okay, now
my daughters are here.
Okay. Well, tell the audience how they can get a copy of your book and speak slowly, and also give them your email that they can make contact on how to buy or to purchase or to find your book.
Okay, right now, Life is What You Make It, Darling, is the first one. Life is What You Make It, Darling, which examines the word commitment and what it takes to survive the ups and downs of lasting relationships, can be found on Amazon. Marlene Taylor I'm the author. Marlene Taylor, MarleneTaylor. And I'm also MarleneTheAuthor.com. Okay? So I think that's easy enough. MarleneTheAuthor.com.
Yeah.
How's that?
I love it. I think that's great.
Okay.
And do you have your website?
The website is MarleneTheAuthor.com.
Perfect.
Uh-huh.
And also the
controller can be found on Amazon.
Okay.
Amazon.com.
I think that's interesting. I think that you've hit on subjects that will last forever. Well, I hope that the abuse will not last forever, but it definitely is something that people need to know when you're experiencing hard times, how to overcome that. You have to have a plan, and you have to know that you're worthy of better life and better treatment.
Yes. I've decided that there are three steps to overcoming a catastrophic event in your life. And the first step is survival. And the second step is determination, where you have to be determined to get back to your old self, to pick yourself up and move on. You have to have that determination. And then the third step is transcendence, where you become a whole different person, and you're better for the incident when you realize that it's all about love, and that's what we're all here for, to learn how to love and treat each other better. And that's that third part. And that can take years and years and years to get to that point. But But meanwhile, you're working on yourself and you're better, and you're better for it, and you're a better person. So
we deserve. I mean, life can be so simple, but then again it can be so complex, because I think that's one of the issues with the youth today. They don't understand. I was brought up in a Baptist family, so we had that foundation. We did go to church, and we had a strong commitment to family. My mother and father were committed to each other. And I think that that's one of the things that's hard and lacking in these days that we're going through. But you have to understand that you have a self-worth. You are important, and you can overcome obstacles, because not everybody is born in the ideal situation to achieve, but you have to have that inner desire to pursue it. And there are a lot of ways that you can receive help. There's a lot of agencies to help you. And I think reading books like yours, gives you some steps and direction as to how to accomplish these things.
Yes, that's what people tell me. I've had many listeners that I've done many radio and TV shows as, you know, guest appearance, and the callers would always say, you know, they've learned so much from reading my books. And it was very helpful. So that's what made me say, well, maybe I should start a publishing company where, I can put out many, many books written by myself and other people who have overcome a catastrophic event, be it a plane crash, which I know I shouldn't say that about you, but
this is part of life.
Something like that.
Yeah.
A car accident, or the boys with the Catholic priest,
or illness. I mean, there's a lot of
or illness
things. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so I said this can be an outlet for all of those people, and that's what I'm doing.
How are you advertising this? It's inclusive of your radio and your TV and your newspaper article, so you're getting the word out. Have you had a lot of women? Do you go to different shelters and speak to these women?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I've been making the rounds to the shelters and giving having speaking engagements at the shelters. And to prisons too. Actually, in Philadelphia, they started a book club at the Philadelphia prison system, and my book, A Silver Tongue, was the first book to for the book club to read. And because it does involve some domestic violence, and the inmates, a lot of times, are involved in those situations, unhealthy, you know, home life situations. So that was one of the reasons why that book was chosen. And these were men. I had a great reception from the men that told me that they learned so much, you know, from reading my book. Yes.
Well, and what about churches?
And churches, yes, churches too. Mm-hmm. Churches are a little bit harder. But they still, the people who are realistic about life and the problems that go on, those churches I was welcome. I'm very welcome in. But because my book does have some sex in it, some people were, you know, reluctant.
I could understand.
Yeah.
I could understand. But then that's fine, too, because, it kind of crosses. It seems like all these different avenues that you're going, they can seem to cross. I think the prison is interesting because I think that for the women who are about to be released, you need to read different things that are inspirational. And I'm sure they have church services, which that's where my strength comes from, you know, Jesus Christ, and so I know that that's where my strength comes from, but you need to, if that is not where you receive it, you need to read, you need to know the other people that have been in that situation, how they overcame, or to give them, so I would think that would be a very positive book for those who are leaving prison to read.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the women and the men. Yes.
The women and the men. Well, and you know, when you say that, the women and the men, I think that we all, because I am a female, we always think that that's the weaker sex and that's the one that's more abused. But men are abused.
Yes, men are abused too. Yes, they are. And they're abused by women and men.
Yes.
And especially a child sexual abuse.
And at this point, you know, yes, I hadn't gone into the sexual abuse. I was thinking more of domestic violence, you know, the being battered, being beaten up. But you're right. I mean, this topic that you're discussing, you've gone from a stressful watching the airplanes and being alert and the whole nothing else exists but what you're looking at on that screen to dealing with a really big topic.
Yes, and I think we need to deal with it. And I've been writing about it since 2002. And
what inspired you
recently,
to do?
What inspired me to write my story?
To write, if this is your story or this is research, or what inspired you to do from this topic? What inspired you to do that?
Okay, and this is a first. Yeah, well, it's not an unusual question. I had people read my books, and they say it felt like a true story.
Okay.
It felt real. And my answer is, it was real.
It was? Okay.
Yes, it was real. And, yes, and we are divorced now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And, yes, so it is based on true events.
Okay. It's a
fictionalized story, but based on true events. And,
well, I think that adds to your credibility. And you can write better when you've gone through things and you're not doing your research and getting hearsay stories. So I have a lot of respect for you for sharing. And also, I would believe that the bottom line is I survived and you can too.
And my first Silver Tongue. I wrote that back in 2002, and as I said, I did not acknowledge that it was based on true events. And
okay.
So but I was still going through the second phase, you know, trying to the first phase and the second phase of trying to survive, and then be determined to get back to my old self. One of the things
exactly.
that I just said that one of the biggest loss in her life for me was that I stopped laughing.
Oh.
I stopped laughing. I didn't find anything funny anymore. And she said that was the saddest thing in the world for her, for me, because I laughed so much. And now I'm laughing again.
Well, I think that should be your next book. I think
yeah.
that should be the next title of your book is Laugh Again, or never let anyone steal your laughter, because I tell
that's
you, you
right.
can be in the, you can never allow that. As they say, I mean, it's a physical thing. Laughter releases different chemicals in your body.
The endorphins. Mm-hmm.
The endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, mm-hmm. we know that it's a true feeling and experience and transformation. So no, I love to laugh. You never can. You got to make
right.
a joke.
I love to laugh. Yes, I love
mm-hmm.
to laugh. So I updated the Silver Tongue, and it's now called The Controller.
Okay.
It's now called The Controller. It's an updated version of the Silver Tongue, and
okay.
And I do acknowledge that it's based on true events.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a little. It adds a little sprinkle of more interest in reading it because it's done from a personal point of view, because we all can talk about, like, I've never had children. So for me to say, I know what that pain feels like, I do not. I know what bad cramps feel like, but I don't know what child labor feels
like.
Oh, yeah. So I would never, as a matter of fact, that was one of the things I said to myself when I had that first pain of cramps. I was like, oh no, who could go worse? How could you live through something worse than this? So anyway,
oh, yes,
I didn't
see. Oh, it is the worst for her case.
Oh, my girlfriend called me. Yeah, my girlfriend called me up after her first child, and hours after delivery, I called her to see how she was doing, and she said, don't do it. And
exactly.
Debbie, was it that bad? She said, Kate, don't do it.
That's
so.
Right. That's what I say, too. I didn't want to say it, but I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And I never did it again. I said, I'm not doing this again. Mm-mm, not me. And I had two at a time. Wow. When?
Oh, but, well, you know what? Thank heavens for the mothers, and I give my my shout-out to them. Thank heavens for the ones who do, because if it hadn't been for our mothers going through, we would not be here. We had not been blessed by God's will to be here. So I'm glad for those who do. And for those who didn't, we're in that club together. So now you were, when I spoke to you the other day, you were taking some shots, some photos, pictures and stuff for your promotional. So are you going to have a big campaign, or can people just go on your website and find out what your different events are going to be? Do you have book signings anywhere?
I haven't scheduled any book signings just yet, but I haven't scheduled any book signings just yet. I'm just getting the brochures and things like that done. And like you said,
okay.
I had a photo shoot yesterday and decided on my new picture. Mm-hmm. Had to update the picture.
I love it. I love it. This is such an exciting time. And for my remedy for people who are going through menopause, and ladies, listen out there in the audience, for those going through menopause, that is one of the things that helps you ease through it. You know, we're going to, for the mothers, you experience the empty nest. I don't know how that feels because I don't have any kids. But what I can tell you is going through menopause, when you have something exciting and self-fulfilling in your life, it removes the loneliness, the oh, woe is me, those down days. You have to have something that's exciting, an accomplishment. And I think, Marlene, you have gone from being in a very hectic, because my mind is still tired just thinking about what the skies must have looked like as I equate it to what I know Tokyo looks like with all the people and the hustle and the bustle, and then you've got all these planes. That is not a job that I ever, ever wanted to do. So I applaud you for taking on that. And at 21, to even think that your concentration could be even that intense.
Yeah. Yeah, but the cutoff is 30. You cannot, if you try to apply for a job, unless they increase the age limit, which I can probably look at now while I'm on the computer, and see. But the age limit for to become a air traffic controller was 30. That was the cutoff.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, because your reflexes are diminished the older you get, so that's just Mother Nature. That's just the sign of the times. You get older, you cannot. Your response time is shorter. So I can understand that. And then at that point, for those who are older, it becomes you become proficient in what you're doing. So the experience pays off after that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So the retirement, the training, the cutoff time is 30 years old. And however, a military air traffic controllers may qualify for their appointment after reaching 31.
Okay.
So we can go to 31. But if you haven't been in the military as an air traffic controller, then the cutoff is 30. And mandatory retirement is 56.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
For
so
air traffic controller,
for my ex-husband, full retirement at 56. So my ex-husband joined the Air Force at 17 years old, and he was in for 10 years, and then went to work for the FAA, and then retired at 56.
Oh my!
At
Isn't
time,
that wonderful?
But he was eligible to retire after 20 years. So actually, he was eligible to retire at 37. But he could have retired at 37.
Oh my!
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful, wonderful life! And for those who don't know, the best thing to do is obviously you work as hard as you can while you're young, and you set a nice young age to retire so that you can still walk around and enjoy traveling. Now, did you, we only have a few more minutes, but I want to get in just a few more little tie-me-up type of tie this program up type of question. Do you or can you still fly? Can you still, I think they're called hops on the airplane. Are you still able to do that?
No, I can't. I can't do it. And
okay.
No, and neither can he.
Okay.
He can't either. So, no, because the hops are considered instructional. That's what they're supposed to be for, really.
Yeah, they're supposed to be instructional.
Especially with the FAA, you know.
Okay.
It's supposed to be for people to become acquainted with the route, with the flight route and the airspace.
Oh.
And that's what it's really supposed to be for. So, but we, in the Air Force, we were, it was a little more lenient, and because that's how the Air Force transported us on planes and helicopters and things like that. So it was easier for us to hop on a helicopter or a plane and go somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, now I retired from the airlines, but I think you know that, and now I still get to fly free. So that was one of the perks. Yeah, I still get on that. And you know, one of the interesting things I like about that, and it's not, it is bragging, but it's also I put in 35 years to get this honor and privilege. But you go to the airport and say, oh, shoot, I don't want to go to California. I think I'll just go on over to New York. You can stay there at the airport and put your little reservations and get right on that airplane when there's seats. I mean, thank goodness Delta is doing well. And the flights are full. So on one hand, I'm glad because we're making money, and you just have to figure out what flight you can get on. But it's a wonderful privilege, and I get it for the rest of my life. So I'm glad I didn't go into the Navy because I don't know how many ships I'd like to keep taking the rest of my life, but I sure like taking the airplane.
I've been on a carrier offload, aircraft carrier, too. And had a little tour on there. It was very, very interesting. The submarine.
Oh. Mm-hmm. But life is so interesting, and I'm glad that you have overcome the things that could have taken you down. I'm glad that when you hit your rock bottom, you sprung back up and bringing a bunch of people with you through your writing, through your talking, and just being who you are. You have been such a wonderful, wonderful guest today. And once again, would you just, before you sign off, give your website one more time.
Marlene, the author, that's Marlene, the T-H-E, author. However you spell that. A-U-T-H-O-R. MarleneTheAuthor.com. Yes. And I'm also on Twitter, Marlene, the author. And it actually cut off the R because it was too many letters. So it's Marlene the author. And then Marlene on Facebook. Okay, Marlene the author on Facebook. And LinkedIn, Marlene Taylor 1 on LinkedIn. So Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. And I like Pinterest too. So I'm also Marlene the author on Pinterest.
Well, okay then. Well, I thank you so much for a wonderful interview. And I tell you, you're released to go, my dear. And I thank you so much. And I am going to connect with you on Facebook. And
okay.
I really appreciate you taking your time. And say goodbye to my audience. And you have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye, everybody. Good talking to you, Casey.
Thank you. Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I have to say that was a very, very interesting interview, and I hope that you did enjoy it because I really enjoyed having her on the show today. And I hope that you will tune in with me next Wednesday, same time, 11 Central Standard Time. Tell your friends to please call me or to chime in. The call in number is 347-857-3609, and we will promise to have another interesting guest, something that you can learn, something you didn't know. So please give me a call next Wednesday on the Fly Girl Show. Have a great day.